just barely. Okay, citizens' comments, do we have?
It's just me on there.
Thank you, Mrs. Sonderbrook.
Okay, Mrs. Sonderbrook.
Thank you.
All right, good evening, Planning Commission. I'm happy that we're finally almost done with signs. But there are a few concerns I still had, and if I could just go through them real quick. I still have concerns that when it comes to window signs, that we may be banning things that are currently accepted practices in town. I've gone and I've measured some of the square footage of things that are on windows around town, and they exceed the limits that we're currently looking at here, like 20 square feet or 3 square feet for illumination. If you look at places like Vito's and Quickie, they have more illuminated signs in their windows than 3 square feet. My recommendation is to not have a maximum square footage limit for windows. We already have in the draft ordinance that window signs can't be larger than the window. I'm concerned about us making things illegal again that are currently accepted practices, and then I don't like how we end up where things are illegal and now we're just depending on who complains about who. Like, I think there should be a clear standard, everyone should be able to follow that. And one thing I want to add, if you're concerned about people taking advantage of window signs and you know, plastering all of their windows on the outside, you could make the decision to have that square footage of outside window signs count against the building mounted sign limit. So that's my recommendation. It's listed in that box at the top all the way on the right. Off-site directional signs. I think we should have an option in town. If a place like Blue Ridge Baptist or a place like Driscoll Funeral Home or even Steve Martin's Auto Body, if they really have a need for a directional sign that points this direction, this many miles, they should be able to ask for that. And so my proposal is to allow the Planning Commission and the Town Council to entertain special use permits when someone needs a directional sign. The maximum that you would be able to grant is a no greater than 2 square feet at each intersection. It wouldn't have to be at each intersection, right? You could decide this is the only intersection that you need a sign for. But it would give that discretion to the Planning Commission that it doesn't have right now to be able to grant directional signs. I'm still concerned about discontinued use and non-conforming signs. I'm concerned that sometimes places in town stay vacant more than a couple of years, and I'm concerned that if they were forced to bring those signs down, that could really be damaging to those property owners. Also, I'm concerned about history in town. If this ordinance passes the way it is when it comes to discontinued use, then signs like the Birch and Ogden sign would have to come down. The ordinance currently says copy on sign face would have to come down. Copy is the letters or numbers on the sign, and so Birch and Ogden and other signs would have to be removed. And I don't think it's necessary. We have maintenance standards that we've introduced in here.
Thank you. Okay, approval of the minutes for the May 7th meeting.
I'm so moved.
Second. All those in favor? Thank you. Subdivision approval.
The first one is really easy. This is the lot that is the subdivision that matches the rezoning that y'all recommended approval for Sandra Brown. So this is going to look very familiar to you because this is essentially the same plat as what you've seen before. It's now 2 sheets just to allow for the notary panel on it. But anytime someone is rezoning, of course it comes to you.
This is Brown.
I'm sorry, that's Sandra Brown. Did I not say that? What did I say?
I thought we were doing. Is this the one we're doing? I'm sorry.
She said Sandra Brown.
Okay.
I got worried. I was confused. So y'all executed this rezoning, and now what we're doing is just bringing to you the subdivision plat. Should look very familiar. Same thing, just dividing off her house lot. Leaving the residue, which is going to be purchased by an adjacent neighbor. That property is, again, all zoned agriculture that you didn't rezone. So if they want to develop it in the future, they're going to have to meet agricultural zoning standards or rezone that property. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Staff has no comments on this plat. We see it to be approvable as offered.
So are they actually going to, are they dividing it into two lots, the lot 14 and lot 15?
That's an existing,
that's
the way it is right now. So what we're dividing off is 15A. Yes, ma'am.
Explain to me why we have,
You rezoned it previously. This is the division.
You rezoned it from the standpoint that she had the right to have the property and he had the right to keep it agricultural, right? So why are we rezoning again the same?
You're not rezoning. This is the actual lot division.
So, if we left it like it was, then she'd still be agricultural, right?
No, sir. You are, the rezoning has already been executed.
Right.
This is actually to change the property boundaries so that she can sell the adjacent property that is still zoned agriculture. This is to actually create those new property boundaries. The way our zoning ordinance is written, subdivisions and site plans come to you for approval. So I have to bring this to you.
I guess I'm confused, Sarah, what we did before versus what we're doing now.
What you did before is you recommended approval of a zoning change for her house lot area from A1 to R1.
Right.
Now what you are doing is you are actually allowing her to draw parcel boundaries around the portion that got zoned R1 so that that remaining land can be sold off to Paul Motley.
So we didn't have a plot per se when we approved the other.
You had a plot, but it couldn't be divided until the rezoning was executed. She needed that rezoning to be able to create this lot.
Okay, but I understand that, but I thought we were looking at a plot when we rezoned.
You did. That's why I said this should look very familiar, because this is outside of having the subdivision language on it, this is the same information you had before.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So do I have a motion that we approve this subdivision at 305 Sunset Drive?
I make
a
motion.
Second?
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
I will take these so that they can have all of these for their closing. Sign these for them. I know that Paul is very anxious to get this all taken care of.
Okay, now we have a subdivision request for the property at the southwest corner of Dulwich and Red 60.
Okay, this one is a bit more complex. You've seen this before with the request from Dr. Brooks.
Yeah.
Paul Kilgore has purchased this property. I know Mr. Kilgore is here tonight, so I'm sure he would be happy to answer any questions for you. Essentially, what Mr. Kilgore is doing is looking at dividing this property into large lots. These are all very easily conforming to your ordinance because they are all very big. He is making sure that every single lot has plenty of road frontage, so we're not looking at any new roads. He has been in contact with VDOT. We are working through the process with VDOT for this. Most of these lots would be, essentially, after we're going to have public water, it has access to water and sewer. He may, at some point in the future, a future owner, someone may come and look at some future division on the lot that has the greatest development potential, but that is not before you tonight. What's before you tonight are legally conforming large lots. The only things that I need to do are make sure that we have the final answer from VDOT about their willingness to proceed with this and make sure they don't have any further comments. And we're going to need to get some additional utility information. But given the fact that these are large lots that very clearly meet the standards of the ordinance, my recommendation to you is that you go ahead and approve these contingent on satisfactorily meeting VDOT's and utility requirements.
So move.
Second?
Second.
Is it in favor?
May I discuss before we go to the, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Am I correct when I'm looking at this, we're looking at parcel C for 15 acres?
All the lettered parcels are the ones that are the new parcels being created, so.
Like parcel A is being?
Yes, A, B, C, D, E, F, and then, let me see if there's a G, no, that's all part of B. So those are all parcels being created out of the original one.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
And if the manor's in the center, right?
Correct.
All right, so we had a motion, second, all those in favor?
Okay, I'll let y'all know once I get everything satisfactorily resolved, but we'll keep this moving along and get the information we need. Thank y'all. Those were the easy parts of the meeting. Now we get to the really fun part.
I can't believe.
Just in time.
Discussion sign ordinance.
So we had talked about last time walking through the sign ordinance and just making sure that there weren't kind of outstanding questions, and then walking through the comments that you've received. Mr. Sonnenroth is the only one who has given me comments, which is not surprising because most people don't read sign ordinances. It's just not the thing that people get exercised about. I did want to make note of one thing that is a concern to me. There was a federal court decision. It was not a Supreme Court. It was not in our circuit. But there was a federal court decision that came out in May that further limits sign regulation. I am concerned based on the outcomes of this case, and Kelly and I have not gotten to talk about it because it literally is a decision that is, I think it was signed May 20th, so we're very, very soon after that. I'm not sure, because of course anytime you get a new court decision, then we wait to see how it plays out over time. But one of the things that I really don't like is out of Reed, which has been kind of the governing Supreme Court decision regarding signs that really talked about this idea of content neutral, and we talked about the fact that you could say it's associated with a circumstance like a yard sale or a building under construction, but you couldn't control what was on that sign, right? So we've been very mindful of that, but one of the paths that Reed left very clearly within the decision was that you were allowed to differentiate and have more stringent regulation on anything that was commercial speech. This newest decision makes it really unclear to me how you differentiate between commercial and non-commercial speech. In this case, there was a town that was had an ordinance that in a lot of ways differentiated between commercial and non-commercial speech in ways that would seem very familiar to us. And they had a mural that was painted on a building, so that the business already had legally permitted signs. And there was a mural that students had painted on the building. And the mural had rainbows and sunshine and all of that, but it also had paintings of baked goods. And the business was a bakery. And the zoning official went and said, those baked goods make that a commercial speech for your business. The business owner appealed the decision. The Board of Zoning Appeals, which was, it was a different name because this was not in Virginia, this was in New Hampshire, so it had a different name. the business appealed it to their Board of Zoning Appeals, and the Board of Zoning Appeals said the same kinds of things we say all the time, which is, if those images relate to what's going on in the building, you know, it is the nature of the picture that makes it a sign. You know, we're not trying to regulate art, but we are trying to regulate commercial speech. These are all things that they said that are extremely consistent with the language that we have used over time since Reed. The court granted an injunctive relief against this ordinance, and they talked about the fact that, basically, they didn't rule on any specifics of the ordinance. So I just need to get a better understanding from Kelly. To me, everything that was said that the town made a defense on, I'm like, this is all the exact same things we would say. And the bottom line is the court in New Hampshire found that, whatever district New Hampshire's in the federal district courts, I don't know, Mr. Sunderman could probably know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. But whatever court it was, you know, they kind of went back to the idea of, how do you say that these baked goods on this building are not acceptable here, when if you had a mural of baked goods somewhere else, it would be acceptable? And this is something that Mr. Sunderworthy's brought up. If you have to look at the sign to determine what it is, then are you now in violation? And if you even say in your ordinance a distinction between commercial and non-commercial speech. Now, this is different than Reed, because Reed still held out the idea that if you were specifically addressing commercial speech, you were safe. Now, one of the things we've put in here that protects us in this case, but not fully, I'm convinced, is the idea that any time you have what is said could be commercial speech, you could use it for non-commercial speech. So that's kind of one of those things that substitution clause that we in essence have in this helps grant us some protection. But I am concerned about that, so I am going to be going back and talking to Kelly again. The biggest thing that this would do, like I'll start out with, when we start out with flutter flags, we have said previously that if a flutter flag was maroon and gray and said Lancers on it, that was okay. But if it was a flutter flag and it said smoothies on it, it was not okay. I don't know, there isn't any way to make that distinction without distinguishing between commercial and non-commercial speech. So I think that if we take a strict reading of what that decision said, then I think what you have to actually do is say the flutter flags are only okay if they're blank. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you have to eliminate all images and speech from it. So I think potentially that may be a direction that, as I go back and reread this, to, because this doesn't fail on its face. We're not wildly off, right, with what that decision said. But there are tweaks like that I would go through and to make sure that I don't use the words in their non-commercial speech.
Right.
I would just say, basically, you can have a flutter flag, but it can't say or have anything on it at all. Mm-hmm. It's just strictly decorative. It can be colorful. Now, that's weird, because then I'm going to be sitting there and somebody can have a purple, red, and blue one, and that would be okay. But as soon as they put a sunshine image on it, I'm going to say, oh, sorry, now it's... But I don't know how else to parse that if we really think that this decision is going to be the direction the federal courts are going to go. Mm-hmm. And this is always the challenge with codes. It's not that we change as much as the law changes. And in the world of signage, it changes a lot more than other things. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we get challenged. But the flip side is, I'm sure the town of Conway didn't think they were going to get challenged either. Mm-hmm. So I would rather not. So
we could just eliminate flutter flags. We can get rid of that problem right now. They're ugly, they're tacky, we don't need them.
It's just,
you can't, I mean, and that's...
No flutter flags.
Well, who really wants...
So there were people on the commission who said that they wanted to allow them, like Second Stage used to have the flags for the, you know, just the plain...
Just for attention.
Right, just for attention. so that's up to y'all. I'm just bringing you options and letting you know. So,
do we have to hold off on this until you and the attorney review it?
You don't need to. I can point out to you as we go through where the items are, and just, you know, suggest to you that we could, if you don't have any problem with it on flutter flags, we can just delete the ability to have speech on flutter flags, and that will take care of that one, for example.
I'm okay with that. I mean, if someone really wants a flutter flag,
for color,
have
right,
it,
for a colorful thing,
to get attention,
right.
But then nothing on it, it's okay with me. But how do you guys feel?
I just said do one.
Do one, but
would a compromise be doing, eliminating them? You really can't put them in the B2, the central business district, because there's really nowhere to install them, and just allow it, maybe, like you said, on second stage.
I think that's kind of what we did.
We provided for a setback, which is going to limit where they would be able to fit.
So,
okay.
I think maybe not having any advertisement on it may limit it too, and just in itself, you see.
Okay, so I'm going to, so it will say flutter flags without speech or
graphics
are not regulated as signs. However, any decorative flutter type flag, and then again, get rid of with no commercial speech, must be set back from any public right-of-way or sidewalk by a minimum distance of its height.
Yeah.
So that will take care of that one for the purpose of.
So I understand, if I may ask this, that means a flutter flag can be anywhere on 2nd Street, well, as long as it can be placed the length of its height, if you will. And we could put them down in front of Food Line.
Mm-hmm.
We could put them down, that's a lot of flags.
It is, you could have lots of them if somebody wanted to have them.
When I was driving through Madison Heights, there's a gentleman, I believe, I saw on Facebook that has a lemonade stand at the old Big Lots, I believe. And he had a flutter flag with, I don't know if it's lemonade or open, and it was, you know, right there next to the road. And it was like this, in my lane, you know, I was in the right. And I was very aware of it and the other vehicles, but I had to swerve a little so it wouldn't hit my car, because I don't know how heavy those things are. Well, having revisited this, you know, if it comes up for a vote, I mean, should we vote on whether we want splinter flags?
Well, I would look for a consensus. If the consensus of the group is to delete that section, then I would just say flutter flags are prohibited.
The people I have spoken with in the community do not like many signs. They say they're distracting. They are. Sign pollution, and they say because we're small, we don't need that attention. How many times do you need to advertise a McDonald's there? You don't need a flutter flag. Everybody knows there's a McDonald's. So I would like to, how do I go about requesting a vote? I'm not interested in, I would like to eliminate flutter flags.
Well, I guess you could make a motion that we eliminate flutter flags. Would that be?
And so previously we have allowed them when we have kind of the temporary banners and things when businesses first open. Do you still want to allow them under that circumstance for that 30-day time period? Or just not at all ever?
Well, it would be a whole lot simpler if we just said no flutter flags.
Okay, I mean, if we vote on it, we vote on it.
Yeah, right. I just want to make sure I'm clear on which direction I'm going. Second,
well, I would say let them have it for that 30 days. That's where I stand. But if we vote on it and I get voted down, I get voted down.
If we do it for the 30 days, we still have the requirement of the no commercial type of, it just has to be color. It just the requirements you were reading.
So previously, under the 30 days, we've allowed people to have flutter flags. Just like we allow people to have banners when a business first opens, we've allowed people to have language on those.
But will we allow it with this new law?
That's up to you all. I'm just looking for what y'all want to recommend to council. I'm hearing a prohibit altogether, Mr. Jones.
I saw all of it.
You only have to worry about whether the signage of it or not. If you don't have it, don't allow foot athletics. Period.
Right. Mrs. Russo, that's.
I just assumed not have it.
Okay, so flutter flags are prohibited.
All right.
I'll put that down.
Well, you know, I like I said, I almost hit one, and that could have caused a damage to me, and my vehicle could have caused me to hit someone. And again, I don't. That's my opinion, and it's not just mine; it's the community's in the jail.
So the next section is the purpose and intent section. We've not had any concerns about that. We've talked about that. There haven't been any comments on it, so I'm going to move past that. Of course, that's non-regulatory. That's really just to explain what we're doing and why. Applicability and administration, same. We've not had any comments on it. There haven't been any concerns or changes since we first brought that forward. Calculation of sign area, I think, has been fine. I talked to you at some point recently, and I told you that Kelly had said that under the sign shall pertain to the property, that she really just wanted it to be the last sentence. Billboards and other off-premises signs are prohibited except as expressly permitted by this article. So she said all that other language you don't need.
Okay.
So permit required, that's same as previously. Signs exempt from obtaining a sign permit. This is where we have spent the piles and piles and piles of time, particularly with the temporary signage. So let's just walk through these relatively quickly.
Which page are you on, please?
3 of 11 at the bottom.
Okay, gotcha.
So temporary signs, number one. When buildings are under construction or sites are under development, signs may be displayed provided they are removed upon issuance of a certificate of occupancy. The maximum sign area of such sign shall be 32 square feet. That's still safe. There isn't anything there that says what they can have on the sign. We're still good. And I don't think we've had any comments or questions about that. Number two has also been fine. When a property is offered for sale or lease, signs may be displayed provided that they are removed within 5 days of the date of closing. That could be tricky under this new decision.
How do I know?
It's been within 5 days. Again, under Reed and some of the subsequent decisions before, it's commercial, so there hasn't been a challenge with that idea. But now there could be. So I think we're still, I think you can get rid of that and say, because it's when it is offered for sale or lease. I don't think a new purchaser or a new renter is going to want to leave the signs up there interminably anyway.
Okay.
So I think you just have when it is for signs may be displayed.
Yeah.
And then it gives the residential and mixed use. It gives an aggregate amount of signage, and commercial industrial gives an aggregate amount of signage. So I think that's all fine.
So that really does leave it up to the
new owner and
new
tenant.
Owner?
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to leave a sign up, they can?
Why would they want to leave a for sale sign?
Well,
then.
I understand.
I know.
Well, look around at some of the neighborhoods. If you didn't have it, they'd. I mean, look. You're surprised at what you see now. People,
right,
having their yards. We have people like on was it Sunset. They were having a fit about all the stuff piled up in their yard. And so I think we're too trusting. I mean,
but that if that's what we have to do, that's
yeah,
what
I just
have to do.
I think that if you just want to make it. Again, at this point, I'm really looking for being in a place where you pick your battles, right?
Yeah.
You pick the things that you really think it's worth kind of saying, no, this language we really do need. I think the more you can make it as clean and simple and not take any chances with creating legal questions, the better off you are. So if there's something that really gives you heartburn, let me know. Because that's the one I'll go to Kelly and say, how do we rework this one to get what we want out of it? But if something doesn't really give you heartburn, then let's just make it as clean as possible.
I don't have water burning on that one.
Okay, so moving on to number three. When a business in the mixed use or commercial and industrial sign district opens, temporary building mounted signs and banners shall be permitted, provided that such sign or signs shall not be displayed for more than 30 days. Maximum aggregate sign area shall be 32 square feet. I think we're fine. Doesn't say anything about anything. Gives a time frame. Love it. When a dwelling in a residential sign district is holding a yard sale, signs may be displayed for only 48 hours and only on private property with the permission of the property owner. Maximum aggregate sign area on all properties combined shall be 20 square feet. This is somewhat troublesome. So I don't know if you remember, we talked before, and I told you that Kelly would really love it if, where possible, you just combined the amount of temporary signage that would be allowed, like in a residential property, mm-hmm. whether it's a yard sale, my political opinion, advertising for a special event, and you just say people are allowed to have this many square feet, and you just walk away from it.
Okay.
And you don't say anything about what any of those are. You just, they're allowed to have this many square feet and we're done. And that gets you out of this, is it a yard sale? Is it an event? Where's mm-hmm. the event? Is it their political feelings? And when you do that, on one hand, it opens up the ability for people to have more different kinds of signage.
Mm-hmm.
But when you add up all of these different things, probably the actual gross amount of signage they can have is probably actually diminished.
Mm-hmm.
And most people aren't going to have 20 square feet.
They can only do 48 hours, right?
Well, no. We're going to get rid of that time frame. It would just say, if you live in a residential sign district,
mm-hmm.
you can have 20 square feet of temporary signage outside of the for sale thing. We'll leave the for sale signs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's commercial speech, so I think we can, you know, we can, again, Kelly might decide, no, we'll include that too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you really wanted to make this as clean as possible, and we talked about this before, this was Kelly's ultimate, made her be in her total happy place. You just say temporary signage, you get this amount in a residential area, you get this amount in a commercial area, and then if you want to allow some additional signage over that in specific circumstances, like when a business first opens, you can. Now again, you may not want to open that door up entirely, because if you said, for example, in a commercial district, every business can have 40 square feet of temporary signage, you're going to end up with all kinds of commercial signage. So I think it's different in the commercial area than it is in the residential area. I think that's an easy play in the residential area. I think in the commercial area, you're going to want to specifically, we're going to have to get at that, how do we allow for the free speech signage part.
But you get rid of the word temporary anyhow, right?
No, I will keep the word temporary.
You will keep that?
Mm-hmm. But I have to be careful about like that 48 hours.
Okay. But
because that's where, if we take...
It's too... But you will keep in temporary, so...
Yes, these are all under the category of temporary.
Okay.
So, I think you're fine with the banners and so forth. It's 30 days. I think that my question goes, when you get to 4 and 5,
mm-hmm.
do you just want to say for residential areas, and that would also include 7 in the residential districts, do you just want to, in residential districts, say people can have a certain amount of square footage of temporary signs?
And say that again.
Would you like in the residential districts just to take, instead of having yard sale signs and special event signs and First Amendment speech signs and so forth.
Just have signs.
Temporary signs in residential districts. And the for sale might, can be separate, we already, you know, I think that's sorted out fine. But just, there you go, 20 square feet.
Do we wanna leave it at 20 square feet?
I would not recommend going less than that, just because of looking at what is consistent with other jurisdictions and what they're doing in terms of that First Amendment speech category.
Okay.
So that, if we think about that from a residential point of view, that takes care of number four. From a residential point of view, and number five, and
seven.
And seven. Mm-hmm. Then in commercial mixed use, this is the part where I'm gonna wanna talk to Kelly about how to get to the way to handle this, because I do believe we have to offer that ability in the commercial and the other sign districts for people to have temporary non-commercial speech, but under this case I don't know how to word that. So I want to do something with the non-commercial sign part for commercial areas, but I need to figure out how to do that. Because I don't, it wouldn't be appropriate to bar that ability for people who, because we do have lots of people who live in parts of town that are zoned for non-residential. So it wouldn't be appropriate to bar that for them. So I just, I'm gonna ask her how to get there from here. And this may be one of those places where we do have something in there that that's the one thing that we can't get away from saying those words, just to make sure we're defining it. So I will have a good time with that with Kelly. Number six, these are the open signs. So we have these as under temporary signs in the commercial mixed-use district at a permitted and licensed business displayed only when open, are attached to a building, does not impede right-of-way for people or vehicles, no larger than 15 square feet. So an example of this is an open flag. Conversely, someone can have one of the little chalkboard signs. Again, I don't think that there's anything in here that's problematic, because it's all conditioned on, it's a district, it's a type of sign, it's where it's located.
Right.
We're not saying anything about what it says. They could say that, you know, the town of Amherst is really giving us a lot of heartburn about signs and their, you know, flag outside.
You know, I don't mean to interrupt, but I understand the law of what we have to do. There are so many people, one of the biggest complaints to me is we have too many signs in town. They just do not like them. And here we are trying to bring in more, which we have to, I guess, legally. But that, a lot of people just don't like them.
Well, I mean, you don't have to. You do not have to allow the open flags. You don't have to allow the chalkboards and signs. These are things that y'all had talked about before.
Yeah, I think the chalkboard is quaint.
Okay.
Open banner, I think, you know, but we have to, I just thought I'd throw that in.
Well, remember, this is supposed to be your ordinance. So if there are things in here that we have gone through that you're not happy with, please let me know, because that's... I know we've spent a long time and everyone gets tired, but we've spent this much time on it, we may as well get it right.
Well, people were so upset about the two-hour parking. They came in and we changed it, you know, and now we have it back again, so I guess we could do it with this. They're going to complain, so we'll just flip it.
Things go round and round.
Yeah.
Window-mounted signs are allowed in commercial districts where there is a commercial use. Aggregate square footage for buildings under 5,000 square feet. This is one of the ones that's going to give me trouble. No window mounted sign larger than the window. Here's where the trouble is. Window signs that do not contain commercial speech are not regulated. And that's where my trouble is. So the goal we were getting to here is limiting signs in windows based on square footage in the commercial districts, but not limiting the ability for somebody, if you're in your home and you want to have a sign that takes up your window with whatever you want to say, I might think that looks tacky, but it's your house. And there's all kinds of things that people can do in their home that we don't necessarily like. But so we've kind of been in that place before. This is another one that I'm really not sure what to do with it, and I kind of would like to consult with Kelly about, because I don't think our intent on this has, I think we've nailed the intent on this, but I'm not sure what to do with it. So I would like to get her advice on that. Permanent signs, signs at a parking lot entrance, and we have two there now, non-illuminated signs. And again, these are still under the signs that are allowed without a permit, so somebody can just put these up. Usual and customary signs identifying disabled parking, restrooms, directional signs, so forth. Signs not visible from adjacent properties or public right-of-way. That's in our ordinance currently. It's one of my favorite things. Because if somebody wants to put a sign on their property where nobody can see it, it shouldn't be anything that I should have to be involved with. Address signs. Advertising vehicles. Remember, this is something that we didn't have before. We haven't had any questions about this. I do think this is a good addition. Warning signs. Flags containing no commercial message are not regulated. We just need to make that sign flags containing no message. And again, that's kind of sad, because if somebody wants to have a sign that says peace, a flag that says peace on it, this is where I think this gets so dumb, because I feel like you should be able to have a flag that says peace. Like, I don't know what to do with that. So again, that's one of the ones I have like a Kelly question on. Because I can picture all kinds of problems with that saying no message. Location on right of way, this essentially says that's a VDOT permit. And then community government signs, this is signs constructed or displayed on public property under the auspices of a local government agency. This is where we had community promotions, and then we got rid of that and just had government signs. This is a Kelly suggestion that you don't have to have a sign permit on public property if it's under a local, state, or federal government agency. I don't think that was really what the purpose of that was, so I think I would just delete that and make a government go through the same process everybody else goes through. We should have done the town hall. Lit window signs. Within commercial districts, businesses may have up to an aggregate of 3 square feet of lit signs. Signs may not blink, flash, or have changing text or changeable copy. We've kind of gone back and forth about how much sign area you should have for lit signs. I don't know the correct answer on that. That's really a preference thing from the commission point of view.
As well as possible.
What Ms. Wheaton is saying about people not liking so many signs, and I think if, as much as we can limit it, then we can.
Okay. All right. The next one is signs authorized by special use permit, off-site directional signs. This is to address the fact that we do have signs in town, not legally non-conforming, whatnot, that are pointing to something that are elsewhere, a business on another lot. This language currently says they have to try to look for their other options, and they could seek a special use permit. And I'm gonna come back to Mr. Sundarothy's comments on it. I just wanted to walk through the whole ordinance first, because he has a comment on that I'm gonna address.
Yeah, I think we need to talk about that some more.
Okay. All right, so this goes through the different sign districts. These did not change from your previous ordinance. Signs prohibited in all districts is on the next page. Most of these are pretty straightforward and exist in your current ordinance. You can't look like, you can't be on VDOT right of way. Can't look like through traffic instructions, so on and so forth. You get to signs that violate federal law, seems obvious. Sign that imitates traffic signals, seems obvious. Pennants, banners, spinners, streamers. This is, we don't want the little weird blow-up guy who flaps around. Don't want ones that make noise, which you would think would happen, but it really does. I really like signs erected in an unsafe location because it gives us the ability, if something comes up that we have not realized was an issue, that is a safety problem, we can address it. And then here's where we had the feather or flutter flags, and this would just now say are prohibited. Full stop. To match what we talked about before.
Now we may suggest this to the council, but they may change. We may change our minds and go differently, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, you will get to do this again. Council will have
I'm
an
so
entire
happy.
Work session on this. And we'll see where we end up. And again, as we talked about before, try to keep these things pretty much the same as they were previously. So the overall standards here don't really change. We removed window signs to the temporary portion, so that's not there anymore. Here's where you have lots of new language. As I've said before, these were items that I brought to you as best practices from other places. They are not things that I am bound to determine you have to have. It's things that are, here's your menu of options. Choose one from A, one from B, one for C, all three, whatever you decide to do. So the first one is sign maintenance. I don't think we've had any comments about including that. And this just simply says that the sign structure, the sign shall be maintained in safe structural condition and in a neat and clean condition, kept free of defect and so forth. I don't know why we didn't have that before. I really don't. That seems like a good one just in general. Sign alteration, repair, removal when required. A sign shall be altered, repaired, removed in any of the following cases. So again, if there is in a dangerous condition, that seems reasonable. If it was unlawfully erected, part of what I do like about this particular section is that this section empowers the town to go and address these things as opposed to having to do a notice of violation and take someone to court to do it. So we're just saying, you know, under these circumstances, the town can remove a sign and then essentially charge someone for the cost of that. This next one is removal of copy on sign face, discontinuance of pertinent use. So if a structure or property is discontinued, then the copy on each sign face, and here I've got that as commercial speech, which would be a problem, shall be removed by the owner or lessee of the property. So this is saying if you've got something and it ceases to be in use, you would remove the sign face. The illegal sign, and you would be taking down the sign face. Now I have heard, and I'll give you an example of places that this has been used, and I'll just pick on Admiral. I always pick on Marathon because they have a lot of signs, I guess. Typically, what we would think about for this is if Marathon went out of business, closed down, whatever, they would be allowed to keep their sign structure, but they would have to pop out that plastic sign face part. I know zoning administrators who think that these are a terrible idea because they're like, I think it looks worse with a big metal frame and no sign face on it. They think it looks worse to have the big metal frame on the building and no sign face on it.
That That's all we need to write on the signs.
It's, that's a question for you to think about. At what point should sign faces go away after a business hasn't been there? Or do you ever want them to go away? Again, understanding that you can, you know, if they're not legal, they can go away.
Right.
If they're unsafe, they can go away.
Right. Well, wouldn't the Merchant Ogden fall under that same?
So, Mr. Sundermurthy and I had a conversation about that, because my intention with this and the way I read this, and I think, again, this is coming from my experience in other places, the ones that I have really thought about is that detachable face. So you have a structure versus a face. The way I think about it, Burton Ogden is more, it's not a detachable face. So I'm not sure that that's not how I would read it. But this is, when he brought that up to me, I'm like, a different zoning administrator might read that differently than I do. So I think this is a thing that you should talk about, what you would want removed, if anything. And then we need to construct an ordinance that matches that. So do you want there to be the question is, do you want there to be a point where a sign face has to be removed? I don't know the answer to that. That's a you question. If so, what is that point? And what kinds of sign faces should be removed, if any? Because another zoning administrator might absolutely go, yeah, you just go and you plop out each one of those letters and leave. I don't know.
What
again, in the places where I've seen this practiced, it's been those popped out plastic
mm-hmm.
kind of things, but it's not clear from this ordinance, and if that's what we intend it to be, that is, because that's what I had in my brain, then I need to make that clear if that's what you want. But I think the question is, what would you want? If you think about Marathon going out of business, would you rather there just still be Marathon signs there? Or would you rather have it be a metal frame with nothing?
Can you have the metal frame come down?
No, if it's a legal sign, you're not. Now, if it's a legally non-conforming sign, then at some point, you know, then there's a time frame, and we'll get to that one scenario in a minute. But if it's a legal structure, that's a different story.
Who allowed that structure to go up anyway? Well, I don't think we should touch anything downtown, the business, but, you know, central business, like Birch and Ogden, that should stay. Because we don't know if the owners there, the new owners, if it's for sale at some point, they may want to keep it. And we're going to focus more on what's going on, like you said, at Marathon. What would that be like?
Well, and I already heard that they say she wouldn't even want to see the blank structures.
I wouldn't want to see the blank.
Yeah, I think that would be worse.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what I'm hearing is this section should go away.
Yes.
Okay.
Go away.
All right. Liability of cost removal by the town, that's if we do have to remove them, that somebody else has to pay for it. Custody and destruction of renewed signs, those are all very just basic, what happens if we remove a sign, how it gets paid for, and what we do with those signs.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this goes into the non-conforming signs. So this is if you have a sign that was legal at the time it was constructed, but has since become no longer permitted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of these we have in town. I dare say most of your legally non-conforming signs, your biggest issue is probably not sign size, it's probably distance from the right-of-way.
Mm-hmm.
So probably most of your legally non-conforming signs, I'll go across the street to the filling station. That is an extremely tight lot. I highly doubt that sign that they have meets their setback. And what this says is essentially you've got that saying you remove the face, and then after 2 years that sign would have to come down. Part of the challenge with this is I do think that part of what you would need to recognize is that if that occurred, I don't know that there is a legal place that would fit on their lot with their drive, with their, you know, traffic aisles and whatnot. And so that kind of goes to the same kind of question with Birch and Ogden. Is that really something you'd want to see disappear for that lot? And same with, like, if we go across the street to kind of the real estate, over, you know, where the Main Street settlements and stuff was. I know when they redid their sign, they were able to replace that sign based on the existing nonconformity that they had. And so again, if you had something happen, the building was vacant for a while, they would lose that nonconformity. So my question is, and again, going back to the idea that you have the ability to deal with unsafe signs now, you have the ability to deal with a sign that isn't being maintained. You know, if Birch and Ogden's sign ended up having a bunch of holes in it and, you know, falling over, you have the ability to deal with that. Same thing if the filling station stopped being there. Do you want the ability to remove signs over time if they are legally nonconforming?
I think it depends on business. I mean, I think...
Well, and that's the challenge. You won't be able to pick and choose.
Right.
So, I mean, that's where... And again, I don't... I really don't... We don't have a lot of signs where I'm like, that is way oversized to what we allow today. Like, the signs have been pretty under control for a long time in terms of size. I think it's mostly setbacks. So I'm not... That's why I wanted to bring this up and really just, if you think about the filling station and something happened, would you want them to be able to have that sign in the future, even if that business had been vacant for 4 years?
So if a new business came in, then we could put new requirements on a new business.
Well, let's use the filling station. If you had this code, and they went out, that was sitting vacant. Sign face could get removed, would get removed. After 2 more years of it sitting vacant, we would require them to take down that signpost for the freestanding sign. The challenge would be if somebody came back in and wanted to redevelop that lot. I don't know where they could put a freestanding sign.
Mm-hmm. You know.
That location that they have that sign in. And the same if you went across the street where the Main Street settlements was, and now is...
There's no...
Right. There isn't any place because of where their parking and their drive aisle is. They literally would not have a freestanding sign. So when you think about those kinds of cases, are those things you would want removed, or are those things you would want retained?
Well, I personally think I would love for them to be removed. You know, in Charlottesville, it used to be when a friend of mine was on a board there, and they would not allow signs that so high, you know, they're lower. I think, and it's been stated before, the view from the traffic circle, you know, going from 60 east towards 60 west, is a magnificent view. And it has been said that there are too many signs, I mean, no disrespect, they just said, wouldn't it be nice if all those signs were there so you could see the beautiful mountains? Well, maybe we could take it and discuss taking those signs down and making it. Oh, so you're saying if they take it down, they may not be able to put anything back up. Well, you know, this is just something I don't know if it's too silly to say, but it's such a small area. You see the gas pumps, you know it's a gas station, you know. The filling station, and they have their little, I mean, it's so small. Why do we need signs like that anyway? There's McDonald's, but we know everybody knows what the Golden Arches are. It's not like driving through Madison Heights and trying to figure out spot by spot.
Well, like McDonald's would probably, I mean, I think they're conforming. I don't think they've got a conformity issue, because as you get further away from the traffic circle, the lots are bigger and the signs are further back. It really is at the traffic circle, those existing long-standing developed parcels that I think are primarily affected.
But am I the only one that thinks that way? I know the advantages of a business person having a sign. I respect that. But this is just like a little village, right? You know, it's like a little
how much more do we need? I mean, in today's world, you have the GPS. People know where to go, you know. We live here. People live here certainly know where to go. I don't know. That's just, I'm just talking, thinking out loud. Would it be that detrimental to a business if they couldn't put up a sign there? Being right there in the smack of one of the oldest traffic circles on the East Coast.
Yeah. Signs are regulated by size too, aren't they?
They are, and like I said, I don't feel like we have a lot of oversized or over height signs.
I say let them keep them.
We have a keep, and we have don't keep.
Well, I sound bad. I'm trying to think.
And again, this will go before the town council. I just want to know kind of the direction and recommendation from the planning commission.
And I'm just bringing, it's not just my opinion, it's others I have spoken to.
I think if the filling station closed and was vacant for 2 years, I think the sign could go because you don't know what's going to come in. And they may not need that same type of signage.
But will it keep businesses from coming in if they can't have that freestanding sign? I don't know.
I don't think it's an objective having it there, but if we're going to change it, now's the time to change it. Do you have any opinion?
Yeah, leave it like it is.
Leave it like it is? Okay.
When you say leave it like it is,
They're allowed now to have their signs there. Both service stations on both sides of the road, both of them the same gas, okay? But they're limited to the property size by what they bought originally. They can't expand either way. Mm-hmm. If something happens to the sign, yes, you've got a different problem, but the signs are there now. Leave them like they are.
Okay. Ms. Driscoll, what's up to you?
It's up to you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that section about removal is going to go away.
So I was on the fence with that one. I'd like to.
It's good to discuss it.
Uh-huh. All right, I'm essentially, so what, and I will double check this and see. Let me look at it and see if there's any part of nonconformity we need to keep. So let me reread this section. Nonconformity is governed broadly by the Code of Virginia, and also we have nonconformity within our zoning ordinance. So this was specific to signs. I'll come back to you and let you know if there's any part of this that I'm like, I really.
Sir, when you start talking about nonconformity, when these businesses came here originally, they were conforming to the sign ordinance that they had.
That's correct. These are signs that were legally constructed but became non-conforming.
How many years ago? That's what I'm looking at. And you can't, you can't go to a business and say you're non-conforming now and you were conforming.
Well, what I was talking about is if the filling station went out of business,
then you're talking about, something different if they want.
Right.
They want to change the signage that they had, new signage, then you come up, they have to apply for the permit. But they use the same signage you got there now, same service station. I don't see why you can make them change.
Okay.
Me.
All right. If you would go to your sheet from Mr. Sunder Murphy, let's see if there are things in here that we need to address. Window signs. Window signs are very, I don't want to get into what our current regulation says because it's a little bit problematic what our current regulation, it's not clear. I think it's broadly open to interpretation. Jack interpreted it one way, I interpret it, it just is not clear what we're doing with window signs. We do currently have something that deals with the lighting part because you can't have the flashing and blinking and all of that already. Mr. Sunderworthy's point is that you have in practice businesses that are using more window signage than what I've proposed within this ordinance based on our discussions. So the question is do you want to allow additional window signage? I believe his suggestion is essentially that you allow as much window signage as people have windows. And he makes the comment that you could apply it against their building-mounted signage. Unfortunately, with that, and I really didn't think about it until he was talking, if you think about McDonald's or Hardee's, they're already using all their building-mounted signage. So if we tried to apply their window signs against their building-mounted signage, they wouldn't they don't have any. So it would actually be more prohibitive. But I think the question is are you comfortable with the 20 square feet for small businesses and 40 for large, or do you want to go up to the idea of you can have as much as you have windows for or some other number?
What's the Family Dollar sign? We talked about that one time.
The one right there by Staff Fitness is 60 square feet. They're building out the size of 60
square feet.
Remember,
they wanted a larger one.
They did want a larger one.
Can you imagine?
That came up at the time we were working on the sign ordinance previously, and we kind of wrestled with that. How big should a building mounted sign? They wanted more, and they said that they had to special order that sign. And then after it got put there, everyone was like, nope, that was the correct size. Like, I don't think anybody had heartburn about it after it went up. They were like, nope, 60 was right. That was correct. So, and they are actually the only people I have had that have pushed back against that square footage. Mm-hmm. I have not had any other business tell me that that was not enough square footage. They were the only ones. So that must be a corporate thing for them.
Ben Franklin didn't have a sign like that, did they? Or Drummond's that large anyway.
Remember Ben Franklin's and Drummond's? Considered a window sign.
No, that's it. But she was just asking in reference to the size. How big is, you know.
Yeah.
So the building mounted square footage is typically 60.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what 60 square feet looks like. The challenge is if we try to offset based on the window to the building mounted, is we would run into a problem with the size of the building mounted signage they already have.
Well, I'm happy with what we've got.
Okay, you're happy and happy. I have a nod from Ms. Day.
Yeah, I think so, because
are you happy, Mr. Jones?
Leave it alone.
Okay, he's okay. All right, illuminated window signs. Essentially, Mr. Sundermurthy asks that you eliminate the 3 square feet and just leave the prohibition on blinking, flashing, and changing copy.
I like the 3 square feet. I think that's 3 square feet is a pretty good size sign.
It's a total amount, so they could have a 1 square foot, a 1 square foot, and a 1 square foot, so a 2 square foot, and a 1 square foot, so it is 3, just to be clear. All right, I hear a yes.
Leave it.
Leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Leave it, okay. Off-site directional. Mr. Sundermurthy has made one suggestion, which I really like because it makes my life much easier. And he has offered another suggestion, which this is the first time I'm going to note this. I'm going to write it down somewhere, where he is suggesting a more restrictive recommendation than I am. So we should take note of both of these things. On off-site directional signs, the language I got, and I don't remember which jurisdiction I pulled this language from, but essentially it said someone had to exhaust their other possibilities before they could apply for special use permit. And basically his recommendation is, why would you do that to your zoning administrator? Just let them apply for the permit. I don't think that's a bad decision. Let them apply for a permit. Why would you do that to your zoning administrator? That sounds very smart to me. So I think that's a great suggestion if you're open to that change. And then he essentially is saying that you should have one sign of 2 square feet or less at each intersection. So he's actually designating locations for these and a size, which is smaller. I didn't have a size listed in my recommendation. I just said somebody to come before the commission and the council to make a request. So I don't know if either of those get any traction with the commission or not.
I have a problem with the whole thing.
Okay.
With directional signs. I mean, I know we've got some in the town, and I know that the council is in favor of them because of the Driscoll Funeral Home and the cemetery, and what are some of the others? Oh, the church. Right. And then the Epiphany Church has got two on Sunset. They've got two signs after you turn onto Sunset. And I think, and then we've got the one down with Martin, down at his place, which is across the road. And I think if they're on the property, that's one thing. But I'm not really in favor of having these directional signs all over the town, because everybody can put up a sign anywhere.
Yeah, but Driscoll's point, how many people don't know where Driscoll's funeral home is?
Right. And then how many people don't know
where... And it's just more sign? I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're right. And that's what I would like to see it as limited as possible.
So you would like to delete the off-site signs altogether? I'm hearing you would like to do that.
Off-site? No.
You don't want any off-site signs?
No.
Ms. Day just says she's here for the ride, and she's like,
I guess I'll go with no off-site signs.
So that section will be deleted.
I can just see more and more signs going.
Okay, you've already addressed discontinuation of non-conforming signs, and we talked about discontinued use of conforming signs. I think we talked about those things. Here is another, this is something that is kind of leftover language, the point that he's bringing up when he finds the first place I can find it. Our existing ordinance talks about basically if you live in a house that's, I'm trying to figure that out too. I would love to know where I am. Let's go to page 7 of 11. Signs located in the commercial and industrial sign district. And if you look at the line it's not underlined or stricken out, it's been in there, it's in our current ordinance. For residential uses in the commercial and industrial sign district, signs shall be regulated as in the residential and agricultural sign district. My concern about this is he feels like it's a problem from like a basically kind of an equal protection and you know different things being treated differently within the same district. I'm concerned because I actually think with all the changes we've made, we've created a little bit of conflict within our own ordinance. And I do think that having residential, again, now we're getting into the when does it qualify as a residence, when does it qualify as a commercial thing. We're prohibiting signs that don't relate to the business on the property. Right? So I'll use as an example of why, you know, I think that this is a problematic thing. The people who bought the old town hall, they're an eccentric couple. They're adorable. And they bought that. They have a house in Connecticut. They have a house in Portugal. They are just a fun little eccentric couple. They love that building. They love the town. They think it's adorable. I don't know if you've noticed, they've put up a sign on the front of that building. It says Bank Amherst. They bought the garage behind it. Okay. That's going to be Maud's. I don't think there's any reason. Again, I think that if we take a strict construction of some of these kinds of things. Now, in my mind, again, this is where you have different zoning administrators. in my mind, I don't see a problem even under our current ordinance with that, because in my mind, that's not commercial language. It's not the Bank Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they have art on their building. You know what I'm saying? It's
mm-hmm.
history or art or whatever, but it's not commercial language because there's no Bank of Amherst.
Right.
But under, as we're moving through this, this little sentence, which shows up twice in your ordinance, I actually think could create a future problem for things like that, where it's like, well, you're using that building as a house, so now you can't have the little garage say Mods, you know, Auto and Body or whatever it's going to say, and the bank say Bank of Amherst or whatever. So I think that over time, as we've made these changes, I think that that is probably not a helpful sentence to have in the two places it's in. And also just because we have increased the amount of mixed use things we have in here, in town. We have lots of people who are, you know, living in the central business district. And so I think just from a flexibility point of view, that should be deleted at this point. The big control, if you have a house, is that you can't advertise a business that's on another property. That's the big control.
I said you wanted to have everyone's ever called the Bank of Amherst. Because this one lived in what? It was a bank originally.
I have no idea. They're really
remember it being Bank of Amherst.
Okay. It was a bank.
It was a
bank,
but I don't think
it was called Bank
of Amherst.
Was it the Bank of Amherst?
I don't know.
I
can remember the Honeybee. They had,
they had
it was
big.
Farmers
they
Bank,
wasn't it?
I tell you, Kathleen Jones, Kathleen Portugal, she went there.
Okay, so we have gone through his list, we've gone through the whole ordinance. I'd like to meet with Kelly, and then I'd like to come back to you again with this particular sign ordinance.
Okay.
Shooby doo.
And I thought we were going to be thrilled.
I really did too, and honestly, until Kelly sent me that case yesterday, and I did not look at it until today, and I honestly wanted to cry when I looked at it. I read that case, and I was like, I just want to cry. I want to cry, because we have gone through this and gone through this, and Kelly and I talked about that commercial speech and making sure we had the substitution. And
are those directional signs grandfathered in
if they were legally constructed?
Okay.
Now, like the Driscoll one that's at the cemetery,
mm-hmm.
I know that's not legal because it got there since I've been here.
Uh-huh.
But if they were legally constructed,
okay.
Now that would be the challenge to prove that or disprove it or whatever.
What about the one, the church, Blue Ridge?
I would
say not.
I don't know. I would have to go back into the zoning files and see if I could find something.
But if they were, then they are grandfathered in.
Right. If it was legally put up, then,
okay.
then it is
mm-hmm.
has legal protection.
Okay.
And I remember to add your citizen comment into the second one.
That's
right.
I didn't sign up.
Okay, you didn't sign up for that one.
He's worn out.
All right. Any concerns from the commissioners?
No, I think, thank you for allowing me to make my comments. I know I sound harsh, but I just speak for the people that speak to me about their concerns.
Well,
but I appreciate hearing it all.
That's what we're supposed to be doing.
On.
I mean, I don't think it's not necessarily just our opinion, but it's the opinion of the community.
Well, if we don't do it right, they'll let us know.
That's right. They will.
Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Do I have a motion for adjournment?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
I second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Meeting adjourned.